Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio on Farmer Friday. We're broadcasting live from the Morton studio today. I'm Darren Hefty along with my brother Brian. It is Farmer Friday. That means we're taking your calls and questions throughout the entire show. We'll answer any agronomic question that you've got or you just want to bring up what's going on your farm. We'd love to talk about that. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. You can also send us an email, radio at agphd.com, or find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Brian Hefty, or Darren Hefty.
All right, we're going to get to the AgPhD mailbag here in just a minute, but before we do, I wanted to let you know we've got three AgPhD workshops coming up next week. On Tuesday, we've got a tiling clinic on Tuesday. On Wednesday, we have our weed, insect, and disease workshop, and on Thursday, we've got a soils clinic. Love to have you attend any or all of those. They're all free. They're right here on our farm at the site of the Ag PhD Field Day in the Morton Center. You can go to agphd.com to learn more about those. I would also throw out on Wednesday, in addition to the weed insect disease workshop, we start the day with grain marketing from Grain PhD. If you would like to attend that, you can. Then we've got our workshop. Then after that, Bear is going to have free dicamba applicator training right after the workshop at 3 o'clock. So we've got three different things coming up on Wednesday, just all great educational information for you. So if you're working on making this next year the best year ever, which hopefully it's going to be, or at least a good year, we'd really encourage you attend any of these free workshops. One other thing I'll throw out before we get to the mailbag. I just sent something out to a bunch of people today about, hey, you know, I realize a lot of people are kind of down on agriculture right now. If you're a farmer, you know, you probably came off of a couple of tough years. But this year, things are looking up. I look at even our farm. Our tile lines are still running, many of them. The rivers are still running. They're not frozen. That's awesome. We actually shut our lift stations off. Weren't able to do that each of the last couple of winters. We did now, so that's awesome. Our temperature, for once, is going to be above normal for January. That's great. We might even be 5 degrees on average above normal. So that's awesome. Then I look at all our costs. Fertilizer's down. Interest rates are down. Seed prices are down. Chemical prices are down. You go through all the lists and you're like, hey, wait a second. This year might not be too bad. We just signed all these big trade deals, and I know the markets haven't been great here this week, but I'm super optimistic moving forward. So anyway, I really want to encourage you, stay positive. Let's start focusing on how we can do the best job possible in 2020. All right, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's now mailbag time with Brian and Darren.
First question comes from Marty in North Carolina. He said, I know that nitrogen loss can occur in three primary ways, leaching, denitrification, and volatilization. What is the likelihood that nitrogen loss could occur with soil erosion? If it does, is that a very common thing?
Yes, it does occur all the time. Now, this is one of the things, too, that we talk about from time to time with regards to tiling. When there is runoff off a field, there is always nitrogen that goes with it. Always, always, always. Okay. When you put tile in the ground, you dramatically reduce the erosion in your field. It's been proven for 100 years by universities, all kinds of organizations around the world. 40 to 60% erosion reduction when you put tile in the ground. That's awesome. And yes, it's possible that a little more nitrate might go out of your field through the water in the tile lines. Now, most of the time, it's drinking water quality based on our studies. But I would just say this. When you look at the studies over the last 100 years, university studies, less total nitrogen leaves the field when you put tile out there. Less total nitrogen leaves the field when you put tile out there. So there absolutely is a whole bunch of nitrogen that leaves the field when you have runoff, both in the nitrate form and in the ammonium nitrogen form.
All right. Thanks for the question, Marty. Marty had one other question, too. He said, I'm wondering if you've ever tried using different liquid nitrogens on your farm. And he mentioned one trade name here, N-Sure. And he said nitrogen content somewhere between 28 and 32%. There's supposed to be a slow release that's produced by reacting urea, formaldehyde, and ammonia. Just wondering if you've heard of that or what you would think of that.
Okay, first of all, we always have to be a little bit careful where we farm because our ground is cold and a lot of times we don't have much rain. So people talk about controlled release nitrogen, and believe me, I'm on board, but we don't want to get too carried away and have it too much of a controlled release because the crop needs a lot of nitrogen. And quite frankly, and Darren, we haven't talked about this yet, but I don't believe all the nitrogen charts. I believe nitrogen is needed much earlier in the season than any of the charts reflect. I really seriously do. Because when we see any yellowing early, that absolutely hurts our crop. We can't have that. We've got to have nitrogen out there and available and ready to go. So all I'm saying is, yes, there are plenty of products that can give you controlled release. Liquids, dries, you name it. We talked about ammonium sulfate, I think, just yesterday on the show. Another controlled release nitrogen product. But don't get too carried away with having too much being controlled release, especially if you're in a colder, drier area where you farm. But yeah, there are a lot of different nitrogen products out there. We've done a lot of stuff with AgriLiquid, for example. We like their things. But if it was me, I would probably try, let's call it three different sources, and just see if you see any difference yourself on your farm. But controlled release nitrogen is going to be an even bigger thing moving forward as our yields go up. Keep in mind, our soils aren't able to hold any more nitrogen today on average than they could 30 years ago. So if they can't hold more, yet we need to apply much more, that just tells you we either have to do lots of split applications or we have to have some way to hold that nitrogen there so we don't lose it until that crop actually needs it.
What do you think about formaldehyde in the formulation of the product?
Know.
That makes me nervous.
I don't know.
That seems like a dangerous
it.
Compound. I'm not sure how much of that's used in the fertilizer industry, but for me, I don't know. I'd be really cautious about that just with the safety factor there. But maybe on the MSDS sheet, it would tell you a little bit more about that. I'd be really curious to look at that too, Marty. Hey, thanks for the questions. We really appreciate it. We'll get right back into your calls and questions after this. Stay tuned. When looking for someone to help with your risk management, a key component to look for is patience. Patience to bring you along in the process at your own speed. Patience to learn about your operation. And patience to not only discuss what strategies may be effective for your plan, but why they would be effective. That's the strength of Grain PhD. I'm Darren Hefty. When you're ready to become more engaged in your risk management, Grain PhD can assist you with that process. Visit grainphd.com to learn more.
When it comes to my weed control, I know a head start can go a long way. That's why I spray early, so I can keep control all season long with a Roundup Ready Extend crop system, the system that makes the difference. This is my field.
Choose the Roundup Ready Extend crop system for control of more weeds than any other soybean system. Featuring Extendamax herbicide with vapor grip technology to manage tough-to-control weeds, including up to 14 days of soil activity, along with the field-proven performance of Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Now you have the right tools to extend your weed control and extend your yield with the system that makes the difference. Learn how you can put the system to work in your field when you visit RoundupReadyExtend.com. Extendamax is a restricted-use pesticide. Performance may vary. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Check local regulations for specific requirements in your state.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio on a Farmer Friday. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD, and you can always send us an email, radio@agphd.com. Start off our show down in Iowa. We've got Aaron with us right now. Aaron, how's it going?
Not too bad. How are you both doing?
Good, good. What would you say right now? I just got this question today from a non-farmer, and he said, how are you right now compared to where you were last year? Are you more prepared for the spring of 2020 than you were for the spring of 2019?
I'd say probably in the same boat.
Is boat a literal term?
Not so much here. We weren't too inundated last year. It wasn't the best spring, obviously, but I was kind of in a pocket. We could get in the field every few days and get some things done. So as far as having tillage done, I got more tillage done last fall just simply because I had my daughter and wife running chisel plow and stalk chopper as soon as I could, because awesome. It just seemed like we were going to go into a deep freeze there. Then we ended up having milder weather, but we got everything done that we really needed to. So I'm sitting pretty good.
Hey, talk about that. You mentioned other family members working out there, and we get a lot of questions from our non-farm listeners about this, about, hey, are these farms getting to be big corporations, or who's actually running the farm? Sounds like on your farm, it's definitely a family affair.
On our farm, it's all family. We've got one retired doctor that we custom farm his ground for him, and he likes to run the cart. So he'll typically run the cart during the day, and then one of my kids or my wife will run till we decide to quit for the night. So
it's
a family farm as far as we're concerned.
So talk about that particular landowner. Did he grow up on a farm? Is that he just wants to kind of keep his farm roots a little bit?
Yes, he did grow up on a farm, and I think he's kind of a farmer at heart, but there wasn't anything there for him, so he went to school, and he was an anesthesiologist for his career, and then he bought an acreage that's got some farm ground around it, and it just kind of worked out pretty well. We were combining his corn one fall, and my daughter was, I don't know, 13 at the time, and she was running the cart, and he was riding in the combine with me, and he said, boy, she does pretty good at that. And then we got to talking a little more, and I said, well, wouldn't you like to get in there and do that? And so then it's kind of worked out good here for 4 or 5 years. He's, being a doctor, he's meticulous, so I don't have to worry about him hitting the auger on anything or spilling too much corn. He's careful.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think we talk a lot about getting along with your landlords and working on that relationship. What a great move for your farm to get him involved, to kind of understand what some of the things that you're doing out on the farm, why you're doing them. That's neat.
Yep.
You know, I was thinking about, too, when you said your daughter got out there at a young age, and I know this is something that my brother and I, it was just invaluable for us getting involved in the farm operation early. What are your daughter's plans, and is she back farming full-time, or is she still in school?
She's still in high school. She's going to go to Iowa State and go into psychology this next fall. And I don't know if she'd want to come back and get into the farm. She loves doing it, and it'd be nice if the kids, I've got three kids, it'd be nice if there was a way they could all have some type of involvement in it, because they're all out there doing it all the time.
Well, it sounds like having a psychologist in the family might be a smart move to keep you all in farming, especially after 2019.
Yeah,
oh, man. Yeah, that's funny. Well, Aaron, it's great talking to you. Good luck here going into 2020. Glad you're in a little better shape. At least you got some tillage done out there. Hopefully things turn out well this spring.
Yep. My wife and I look forward to seeing you guys next week, too. And anybody out there, if you haven't been to their clinics in the winter, get to one. It's worth it.
Hey, thanks a lot. I appreciate that, Aaron. Make sure you say hi when you're up here next week.
I will.
Let's head down to Arkansas. We got our friend Miles on with us. Miles, how are you doing today?
I'm very well, Jim, and how are y'all?
We are doing quite well. I was just at a livestock show in our nearby town of Sioux Falls, and there were some people from Arkansas that were up showing livestock at this show. They said it was a pretty competitive show and was worth the drive up, and I thought, wow, that's really cool. I didn't realize that was that competitive. We'd draw people in from that far away, but they were sure excited to be here, and it wasn't their first time coming.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I mean, if you're doing breeding stock and whatnot, people will travel quite a ways. I know people, some friends of mine have gone all the way to Australia and Europe you know, with different animals. So it's a big deal.
That is really cool. That's really cool. Okay, so speaking about animals, 2019, I know it's kind of a rough year for some of us crop production farmers, especially with river bottom ground. How about for livestock? Was it one of those years where you really struggled there too? I know a lot of pastures have got some low-lying ground in them, and that could be a problem.
It's what my wife would call a Tupperware year. It'd been better to sell Tupperware. But, yeah, the prices haven't really been that good. It's been extremely was wet summer, stopped on a lot of the hay production. Then it was extremely, where we're at, decent fall. But, I mean, this winter, luckily the temperatures haven't been bad, but it has just been just nasty wet, and the fields have just taken a beating over it.
Yeah, you mentioned hay production. I know we talked to so many growers around the country last summer that it seemed like almost everybody said, well, I got one cutting up without it being a total disaster, but outside of that, it was challenging. How about for you? Was this something that every cutting was trouble?
Yes, sir. Every cutting has been a pain in just to try to do it. And this year, we had been thinking about it for several years, getting to the haylage end. And last summer pretty much sealed the deal for us of just the amount of time it, you know, it cuts off to do it. And it's not been a good year for hay production. It's just the weather just wasn't sitting right and it wasn't growing right. And then if you would cut it, you'd get rained on. So, like I said, this last summer has definitely pushed us into starting with haylage full time.
You know, just the other day here, I believe just yesterday, Brad and I were talking about some of the new weed control products coming out for pastures and just talking about some of the different combinations for brush control and also a move by the industry to just the beginnings of a move, I guess, to get away from using 2,4-D with some new compounds with less volatility. When you look at weed control in your area, are there any weeds you're really struggling with? And then when it comes to herbicide choices, are you finding there's enough choices out there? Or are you pretty excited for some of these new things?
To answer your last question first, no, I'm excited for something new to try. And our biggest issue that we're going to have to face this year is we've reclaimed a bunch of ground via a mulching process, and we're going to have a bad problem with bamboo. That's going to be our nemesis for the next several years that we're going to have to deal with.
What do you do for that? I guess we haven't had to fight that particular problem on our operation, but do you have a good strategy? It's just that it takes a few years to really clean it up?
Well, everything that I've researched and everybody I've talked to, they've told me that, I'm sure you guys know better than me, that however tall the bamboo is, that's how deep it goes in the ground. And I've researched, and basically everything that I've come to is you have to use Roundup on it, and it's a several year deal because just the sprouts will kill you. And you know, I've looked at 2,4-D or anything, and everybody that I've talked to said it's just a Roundup is what we're going to have to use, and the problem with that is you're killing everything else too.
Sure Yeah, that's a challenge. I guess you're stuck with annual pasture then, right? You just each year have to start over again.
Well, and that's I've talked to people about, you know, we know nothing about tillage like you guys, you know, even talked to guys like, man, should I buy a disc or something like that and try to do it that way? And, you know, even have to deal with the rocks and whatnot, we pull up, and everybody I've talked to said that's the worst thing you can do. And they said it's about a 2-3 year process of this, and then after that, hopefully you'll just be at a spot spray.
Well, good luck with that project. I don't think it's probably feasible to bring in a herd of koala bears or anything to try and wipe out that bamboo. So hopefully the Roundup works just fine for you, Miles.
I don't know. We'll think of some. I've got a little boy coming in 2 months, so hopefully this spring I'll put him to work, you know, picking sprouts or something.
Yeah, I don't know, whatever it takes to get that under control. Well, Miles, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on. Good luck this spring. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Customer service goes a long way when trying something new. Ryan Shaw from Michigan shares how Soil Warrior helped him transition to strip tillage in his operation.
The Soil Warrior guys, they are amazing to work with. They made this jump in this transition extremely painless. One question that I get all the time is, how is the service and everything? And I said, well, actually, I get better service from them than I typically do my dealers uptown. They're just amazing.
More info at soilwarrior.com.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic has proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
Find your full potential and increase your bottom line with branded generic herbicides from Atticus LLC. Tough broadleaf weeds are a hassle, but they're no match for Cavallo from Atticus. Cavallo delivers fast, contact, and residual control so your corn, soybean, and sorghum crops can thrive. Growers across the region count on Atticus for relevant and reliable products that deliver results every time. Ask your local retailer about Atticus products and visit AtticusLLC.com to learn more. For value-based solutions you can trust, turn to Atticus. Always read and follow label instructions.
Revitech fungicide from BASF has been specifically developed for the selective soybean grower who doesn't compromise. If you think good is good enough, if you're okay with just achieving rather than overachieving, if average is your goal, this is not the fungicide for you. Revitech fungicide, brand new chemistry, 3 no-excuse modes of action, 0 modes of compromise. Sounds like the fungicide for you. Revitech fungicide from BASF, that's smart. Always read and follow label directions.
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark, and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Bean growers continue to see yield loss from white mold across the Midwest this season. To maximize next year's crop, a white mold prevention strategy that includes Contan's WG soil fungicide is a must for your farming operation. Applying Contan's this fall to reduce the sclerotia in the soil is the most effective way to stop white mold at its source. Start a Contan's white mold control strategy this fall or pay for it later in lost yield.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio on Farmer Friday, taking your calls and questions all throughout the show at 844-44-AG-PHD. Let's head over to Eastern Ohio. We've got Fred with us right now. Fred, how are you doing today?
Doing pretty good. How are you guys today?
Not too bad. We were talking with Aaron down in Iowa, and he said he was in the same boat as he was in last year. And I said, boy, I hope you're not literally talking about a boat out on the farm. How are things in Eastern Ohio?
I had a boat right now because it's been raining all day. So, but other than that, things are going pretty good. We're in a pretty good spot, getting ready for spring.
Excellent. I understand you had a question on nitrogen.
Yeah. So we've used some of the agri liquid products before, and talking about some of the time release. I heard you had a question about that earlier today. My question is. Now, we use some with our sprayer, which is kind of nice because we run Gramoxone, so that really helps fry it. What my other question was is, all right, so how does CEC kind of play into that? Like, we've got pretty light soils, anywhere from like a 6 to 8 CEC, and I hear you guys talk about, you know, you don't want to put on more than 10 times your CEC for nitrogen because of that's how much it can hold, that kind of thing as a rough figure, but I didn't know if with the time-release products, if you guys have seen that kind of affects your decision-making at all or not.
Sure it does, and it's the same type of thing as nitrogen, a nitrogen stabilizer. either way, we're still concerned about how much nitrogen you put out there, and we don't want to go too overboard, but can you push it a little bit? Yes, you can. I just don't know exactly how much. You kind of have to use your best judgment on this thing. If you say, look, I really only need it to last an extra week or two, that's whole different than saying I need it to last an extra month or two. You know what I mean? So in your case, 6 or 8 CEC, yeah, that's really low. And you're in an area of the country that gets twice as much rainfall as what we get out here. So, you know, for me, yeah, I'm going to be pretty concerned about that. And I might push it a little bit. I might say, you know what, if I've got a controlled release or I got a stabilizer with it and I'm still applying, at least in the spring or early summer, I might push that instead of just putting 60 or 80 pounds on. I might push it to 100, but that's about as far as I'm going to go.
Yeah, because we split it up with the sprayer, like 15 to 20 gallon.
Sure.
And then we'll come back through with the planter and put some off 2x2.
Yep.
And we don't have a good setup to come back in on the side dress. We were doing urea, but we were kind of concerned about getting some urea in the world.
Yep.
Around that V5 stage. So
yeah.
And we kind of switched to this a little bit, and last year was a heck of a year to try it. So.
Right. So I would just say, if it was me and I was farming in your conditions with that soil type and the amount of rainfall that you get, if I'm trying to push yield and my goal is whatever, 225, 250, eventually hopefully 300, there's almost no way around it. You're going to have to put some on in season. You're going to have to come up with some type of side dress machine, unless, of course, there's irrigation and you could pump it through irrigation water. So if you don't have that, then you're going to have to come up with something long term. And I'm totally with you. I don't like putting urea over the top either, so we typically go liquid.
Okay. Cool.
All right.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate the help there.
You bet. Yep. Good luck out there, Fred. Thanks a lot for calling in.
Let's head up to Montana. We've got Scott with us right now. Scott, how are you doing today?
Hey, we're doing pretty well up here. How about you guys?
Good, good. How's the winter going so far in your part of Montana?
Well, we've had a pretty easy winter so far. We had about a week of it last week. We were below zero and a little cold, but now we're up to 45 degrees, and it's supposed to be that way for another 2 weeks, so we're pretty happy.
Yeah. How does that impact things like winter wheat when you have a warm-up like this in January?
Well, our winter wheat got planted pretty late because we had a late fall, so a lot of it didn't even emerge. So I don't know that it's going to negatively affect anything too much.
Yeah, that's really a game changer when it goes in a little bit late. I've got a friend that put some winter wheat in once so late. He's like, yep, I'm just basically doing an early seeding for spring, and you know, he said surprisingly it worked out really good. I don't know, have you had that happen before?
Well, we've had it happen a couple of times, and it does seem to turn out okay most of the times. Maybe 1 year it didn't work out so good, but no, most of the time it seems to be okay to kind of be dormant seeded, so to speak.
Sure, sure. All right, so with the prices where they're at right now, I was talking to a farmer in western North Dakota about, he was just kind of running through, man, I got so many different crop options, and there's actually a few that I could probably make money on, which is always a good thing, I guess, if you're going to do all that work. Are there some crops that look more profitable in your area than others this year?
Well, lentils. We grow a lot of lentils here, and last year the lentil market was really bad. And this year it's a little better. It's moved up some. If we get an average lentil crop with the price that we are getting today, we can make a little money. Spring wheat's not too bad. We can do okay on the spring wheat. But the one that we've grown a lot of that's been a good crop is yellow peas, and that market is really pretty tough. And that would be probably the crop that we'd be looking at not planting nearly as many acres. Just not looking too profitable.
You know, when you're rotating things like lentils through in your area, how often can you have that on a field? Is it a 3-year rotation or 4-year rotation, or is it a little different in your part of the country?
I try to make it every 3 years. I don't want to get any closer than that. Certainly don't want disease issues and weed problems. The lentils are new enough in this part of eastern Montana that I don't think we have the disease pressure as some places, but I sure try to keep it at least every 3 years.
How about corn? You didn't mention corn. I'm just kind of curious about that. I know a lot of the guys in North Dakota are stuck with corn in the field, and it's not a good situation at all. How about in eastern Montana?
Well, we actually do grow a little bit of corn, and I kind of failed to mention that. That's a rotational crop for us. And because we have a lot of livestock producers and ourselves being livestock people, we can kind of get rid of it right in the field. And it's actually a pretty good crop. We can't grow thousands of acres of it, but we can grow 500 or 600 acres and get rid of every bushel, either through our own cows or the neighbors, without putting anything on a truck hardly. So that's actually a good rotational crop for us.
Excellent.
And we'll be planting more.
How far can you push maturity where you're at? Can you go up into the mid-80s, or are you down in the mid to late 70-day maturities?
Well, we're in the low 80s. We tend to go from 78-day all the way up to 83-day. I have done an 85 and an 89-day even, and that does kind of get out there a little bit for maturity. But if you can keep it in the low 80s, it will mature. And even this year with late year, it matured fine. It did take it a while to dry like everybody else. And, you know, we were combining corn just right before Christmas and did actually get it done and got dry enough. But so, you know, early 80s is good for us.
So for the livestock, are you running a combine through it then and just grinding up the dry corn? Or how do you utilize that as a feed?
So we'll just combine it, and then we do grind it and mix it in with hay and feed the calves and some of the younger cows. And then something that we really like doing is just turning the cows out after we're done combining, and they just get to graze the stocks as long as the winter stays pretty open. And they do really well on that. It's a pretty cheap way of wintering the older cows.
Talk about that just a little bit, because we do get a lot of questions from our non-farm listeners about that. They see cattle out on stalks, and they say, is there that much corn that's laying on the ground, or what are they doing for feed out there?
Well, since we try to cut our corn drier than probably most farmers, there is corn laying out there because it shells out a little bit. And there is a fair amount of corn on the ground. You know, you'll see it in their stools and stuff. And I think they like to eat that ground up cob that runs through the chopper. And then on real, real cold days, they'll actually kind of nibble away at the stalks and what's left of the stalk. And they really do well. There's a ton of energy in the corn stalks. And if you just put out some protein, the cake or some protein blocks, they'll winter really well on it and just fatten up good.
Yeah, they sure do like it. I know it's kind of fun watching them out there doing what they do and turning those stalks into something awfully useful for the next crop. Been talking with Scott up in Montana. Scott, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on, and we'll talk to you again sometime.
Thank you, guys, and have a good one.
You bet. It's Farmer Friday on Ag PhD Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
Using N-Serve nitrogen stabilizer with fall fertilizer applications keeps nitrogen available into the spring for maximum crop growth. Field trials in Iowa show N-Serve delivered an average revenue increase of $22.96 per acre, and N-Serve is the only recognized nitrogen stabilizer product in the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy because it reduces nitrate leaching. That's max profit in an environmentally sustainable way. Calculate your field's profit potential at nitrogenmaximizers.com.
We know balanced crop nutrition pays. AgriLiquid has the research, technology, and products you need to grow a great crop, plus the expertise to give you a recommendation based on your soils, your fields, and your goals. AgriLiquid has the phosphorus, potassium, and micronutrient products necessary to deliver the best results from a solid fertility program. Visit agriliquid.com to find a dealer near you.
Avoid dry run failures with the new Hypro Force Field Pump. Providing the ultimate protection, this wet seal pump will save you on costly in-season downtime to keep your sprayer running. Now all you have to worry about is the weather. Hypro, helping you spray better.
The last thing you want after harvesting your grain is to spoil it before it goes to market. The Grain Temp Guard from Farm Shop MFG is a low-cost bin monitoring solution that tracks temperature and humidity and alerts you when conditions exceed safe thresholds. Visit farmshopmfg.com.
You know a healthy crop is required for your best results. Simply put, balanced crop nutrition pays. AgriLiquid fertilizers have the research, technology, and products to deliver those results. We also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you with your fertility decisions. AgriLiquid can help you maximize your yield potential effectively and economically. Visit agriliquid.com to find a dealer near you.
Your independent spirit is more rewarding than ever before. Unlike programs that require growers to purchase a particular seed brand or to bundle certain products, the FMC Freedom Pass program rewards you for making the best choices for your fields. Our exclusive agronomic rewards, performance assurances, application innovations, and product financing make it easier to protect your crops and cash flow. Visit your authorized FMC retailer or FMCFreedomPass.com to calculate your potential financial incentive and learn more.
It's Farmer Friday on Ag PhD Radio. We're taking your calls and questions throughout the show today at 844-44-AG-PHD. Let's get back to the phone lines. We've got Cameron in Virginia on now. Cameron, how are you doing today?
Doing pretty good. How y'all doing out in South Dakota?
You know what? We're doing okay. We're above average temperature for the month of January, and that makes us smile here because it can get pretty cold.
We're good. We've been having T-shirt weather all winter. We finally had a little bit of cold weather this week, but it's been in the 50s and 60s most every day since Christmas.
Wow. Wow. Okay. Is that a good thing? I mean, it's nice for people. Is there any reason that you would like it to be colder? Or do you need the snow or moisture or anything like that?
We're getting plenty of moisture. We're getting plenty of rain. We had a little tiny bit of snow, but not enough to really do much good. But the cold weather helps with the insect pressure from some of the pestrous insects like mosquitoes and gnats and all in the summertime. And I also think it helps with the agricultural insects and helps knock them down some. We've got a real bad problem with stink bugs, with the brown marmorated stink bugs. And I think the cold helps knock them back some.
Yeah, we try and do everything we can, Cameron, to make it seem like it's a good deal to live here where it gets really cold. And we're like, yeah, we kill off a lot of disease, we kill off a lot of bugs and that kind of thing. So that it really that part really does help us in farming, no doubt about that.
Yes, sir.
So for your farm this year, what kind of year did you have?
The corn was probably the best corn we've ever had. We averaged a little over 190 bushels. We generally average around 150 to 160, and we made about 190 this year, so it's by far the best corn we've ever had. But the beans were all over the board, anywhere from 25 to 85, just depending on where it was and how much it rained. I think I discovered this year that it's more the timing of the rain than the amount of the rain. If we got rain at the proper time, I think the beans did a lot better as far as yield-wise, but we had some beans, like I said, that were in the mid to upper 20s, and then we had some beans that were in the 80s. So it just all depended on where you were and what time the rain came.
Now, are you double cropping beans there, or is this a spring planting?
A little bit. We do both full season and double crop. It's a very common practice here in Virginia for us to double crop. The farmers closer to the Chesapeake Bay over in the eastern part of the state where it stays a little bit warmer later have a little bit better luck double cropping behind wheat. We can double crop pretty good behind barley here. The barley comes off late May, 1st of June, and beans do real well behind it. And wheat generally doesn't come off till late June, 4th of July, somewhere along in there in this area. So you're kind of pushing it a little bit. But farther east in Virginia, you can do real well with double crop beans.
You know, there's been so much talk about all these trade deals, and we're hearing some good news. I guess we'll see how it all plays out. But I would assume being a little closer to the coast, this may have even more impact or more immediate impact on you in Virginia than here. What's the general feeling about these trade deals, and is there some enthusiasm with farmers in your state?
Hopefully, we can get the deal worked out with China and get the Chinese interested in buying U.S. beans again and not so interested in the South American beans. As far as being close to the coast, that helps, of course, with our basis. We can haul to Norfolk. It's about 2 hours away, and it doesn't cost a tremendous amount per bushel to haul down there, so that really helps. And a lot of those beans are going to Europe from that part of the country. But as far as the trade deals, I think if we can get the deal worked out with China, and I was really excited to hear that we got the new North American trade going with Mexico and Canada, I think that'll be a very positive benefit for us, since they are two of our largest customers and they're so close. So I think things look, in my perspective, I think things look pretty good.
Outstanding. Well, Cameron, it's really nice talking to you. Hopefully you keep that t-shirt weather up the rest of this winter and get to the spring sooner rather than later. Really appreciate chatting with you, and good luck going into the spring.
Yes, sir. Thank you. You have a good year.
Bet. You as well. Let's head down to Iowa. We've got Jim on with us right now. Jim, how are you doing today?
Hey, pretty good. And you, Ben?
We're doing pretty well here. We're getting kind of fired up for our workshops coming up next week. I know that.
Well, great. Hey, I have a question on some soil fertility.
Okay.
I've been going to some of your workshops and started soil sampling myself, and grid sampling, and we're fertilizing for grids and trying to build yields. And then one time I took a sample up to Brian at one of the clinics, and he said, it looks like you could probably have good corn yields, but your bean yields are suffering. And I said, definitely. And he said, you need to build potassium. This is like 6 years ago. So I started building, putting more fertilizer down, got immediate yield response on corn and also beans. And as I'm sampling every other year, my base saturation is slowly building, very slowly, but my parts per million is dropping. It's like I'm fertilizing more. I know I'm getting more yields, but it's like I'm going backwards on my parts per million. But my organic matter is increasing too. So my question is am I getting fertilizer tied up in the organic matter? Or do I just keep throwing more fertilizer at it?
Well, there could be a number of things happening, Jim, and I'd have a few questions for you. First of all, are we sure that you're pulling from the exact same spots every couple of years?
Oh, when I do it myself, I park the pickup and walk around it.
Yep.
Probably not the exact same spot, but
pretty close?
Area.
Yeah.
Yeah, fairly close.
Yeah, that could make a little bit of difference. And, you know, so you talked about 6 years ago, and if you're sampling every 2 or 3 years, we're really probably only talking about one or two instances. So one or two different years where you've seen that come down. So I'm not overly concerned. I'm hoping that it's just a little skew of the data that you got a slightly different spot and there's a little variance there. But the good news is what you said is your base saturation K percentage is going up. And the even better news is you said your yields are going up. So things are going right. I'd also say, you know, let's keep in mind, as your yields are going up, you're going to pull more out of the soil. So, I assume you've calculated all that in, but you know, you got to figure that too. Could some potassium be tied up in the organic matter? That's very unlikely. There's very little potassium that comes out of organic matter. It's phosphorus, it's sulfur, it's nitrogen. Those are typically the things that are coming out of organic matter. Usually the potassium doesn't get tied up in there. Now, could it just be tied up in some soil colloids? Could it be bound up with some more magnesium or, you know, something else out there? It's certainly possible. It could also be at a different level in your soil. If you look at the last couple of years, what's happened? We've had wetter years than normal. Potassium is slightly leachable, not much, but slightly. So it could still be there. It might just be a hair lower in the soil. Maybe it's at 7 or 8 inches instead of being at 5 or 6 inches like it was before. I don't know. So I'm just throwing a bunch of things out. It's honestly a guess unless we did some very specific testing. But I'm just happy that your yields are going up, your base saturation K is going up. So all that sounds good to me. And I don't think I'd be overly concerned about the fact that, hey, the parts per million appears to be going down. I don't think you're going to find that to be true as you continue moving forward in the next 5 to 10 years if you're truly on a build program. By the way, let me just ask you real quick, where are you at, like on average for your base saturation K percentage now? Are you at 4% now, or where are you?
Oh, no. When I first started, we were closer to 1.8 or 9. Now I'm at 2.2.
But okay.
Like my parts per million were at 170, 80, and now I'm at 120 to 130. You know, it's consistent across all my fields.
Wow.
So that's where I just had the concern, but
yep.
My thought was I'm just going to keep up and fertilizer.
Yep.
I just wanted to bounce it off you guys just to see if I'm looking at this wrong.
Darren, do you have any other explanation? I don't really know that. All that seems very strange to me.
No, I'd be curious to see the test just from a standpoint of calcium's dramatically changed or magnesium or something like that.
Let me ask you this real quick. What kind of yields have you pulled off the last 3 years for corn and for beans?
So right now, I average right between 230 and 240 on corn.
Okay.
And beans now we're between 60 and 65. Where before I was about 185 to 90 on corn. And beans, I struggled to get 50.
Okay, and how about potassium? How much have you actually applied per year in the last 3 years?
What we did is we applied a two-year removal at 240 corn and 60 bushel beans for 2 years. But then the following year, I would add another 125 pounds of 0060. Another 50 pounds of 1152 old, just as that was my field program.
Got it. All right. We got to take a quick commercial break here, Jim. If you want to hang on, you sure can. Otherwise, we'll answer that question right after this.
Maximize your flexibility and control the toughest broadleaf weeds and grasses with Anthem Max herbicide from FMC. With a wide application window in both corn and soybeans, and with an easy-to-tank mix formulation, Anthem Max is ready to go when you are. Visit fmcagus.com or ask your FMC retailer about Anthem Max herbicide. Always read and follow all label directions and precautions for use. FMC and Anthem are trademarks of FMC Corporation or an affiliate.
Your grain bin fans can cost you a lot. High electric bills from running when conditions are not ideal, shrinkage from overdried grain, and spoiled grain all take money out of your pocket. With the Steps GMS app temperature humidity switch, get your bin fans to start making you money. Only run vans when the conditions are right. Eliminate shrink and spoilage in your bins. Deliver grain in top condition at market moisture. When every dollar counts, you need Steps GMS. Contact us today at stepsgms.com.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer Amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer Amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
As your corn crop grows and the ear begins to form, potassium is at a high demand, almost as high as nitrogen. The same is true for soybeans, with similar high demands of potassium during pod fill. Don't fall behind. Ensure your crop is getting its potassium with Catalyst. Catalyst by Actagrow has been shown to be the best at entering the leaf when compared to other leading potassium products. Visit k-supercharged.com for more information.
White mold and sudden death syndrome are two of the most important fungal diseases in soybean production today. But did you know 40 to 50 million acres in the north central region are affected annually? When every season has different disease challenges, the question becomes, how can you ensure the best start for your soybeans no matter what? The answer is Heads Up Seed Treatment. Trusted by growers across the Midwest, Heads Up offers a new mode of action to prime your beans to help fight fungal disease. For more information, visit headsupst.com.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Right before the break, we were talking to Jim from Iowa about his soils, and he just said his base saturation K has been going up, but his parts per million are going down. So first of all, if that's actually the case, then that probably means that some of the other nutrients have to be going down that would be in that base saturation. So what that is we're talking hydrogen, sodium, calcium, and magnesium. So something in there would have to be going down. And it is certainly possible that, let's just say that his magnesium started binding with more sulfate that forms Epsom salts, and some of that could leach out, and that could mean his base saturation K is going up. But he did say his yield's going up, and he said he has applied more potash than what he has removed in the last couple, 3 years. So his parts per million really should be going up. And personally, I think, Jim, you're going to find that your parts per million will start going up here in time. I do think we've had a couple of wet years. I think there are some unusual circumstances. And if you weren't hitting the exact same spot in your fields, you know, things can vary a little bit. But, you know, the key things, and what I always tell people is, quite frankly, I don't care much about soil testing. I don't care about the levels. I don't care about anything other than ultimately what I care about is yield and profitability. And if your yields are going up, then we know we're on the right path. And you said you were at 1.8 for base saturation K. Now you're kind of around that 2.2 range. You know, that's still to the point where we say you're low. And potassium absolutely should give you a good return on investment, provided that you've got other things taken care of, like drainage, for example. But on our farm, I was just thinking about this during the break. When I buy new ground now, you know what I shoot for, Jim? And I'll do it in one shot, 7% base saturation K. When I look at a lot of these really super high yield guys, they've got their potassium levels real high. And part of the reason, when you're going from, let's say you get to 4% base saturation K up to 7%, a lot of times you might not gain ridiculous amounts of yield, but what you do gain is much, much, much better stalks. And we saw so much green snap and lodging this past year all around the Midwestern United States, where we had our base saturation K numbers super high, we didn't have that. With potassium, we don't have, well, I said earlier it's slightly leachable. It doesn't leach that much in heavy soils. So I don't get that worried about my potassium being lost if I put 7% out there. I spent a bunch of money up front. Then I basically just do a maintenance level after that, and it's no big deal. But where you're at, I'd continue on your program of at least getting some build out there. And I'm optimistic that you're going to see that parts per million level start going up here in time. But just keep building that base saturation K and building your K in general, applying more than you're going to remove. And I think good things are going to continue happening on your farm. Any other questions? Anything else you got there?
No, I appreciate you answering my question.
You bet. Yeah, thanks for calling in. Good luck this year.
All right, thank you.
You bet, thanks.
Yep, bye.
All right, set up to Michigan here. We've got Todd on with us. Todd, how are you doing today?
Great. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I got two questions. I'll give you the easy one first. I'd like to try using some biologics for the first time. When I'm planting, I do everything dry. We broadcast our fertilizer on. I've got a older John Deere 7000 planter, so I'd need to have a biologic I could try that would be dry. I could put in the seed box.
Okay. One quick follow-up question. What about in-furrow? Do you have in-furrow capabilities?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay, because I think there's a lot of choices. Once you get to that in-furrow, I would recommend looking at just even something simple like a Dosatron. It's pretty inexpensive. Okay. And then you could do stuff right in-furrow. And, man, can you get a lot more higher counts. You get a lot higher counts delivered to your field per acre if you can do that in-furrow treatment than if you're doing it on seed. And plus, you don't have to worry about trying to over-treat and that kind of thing.
Yeah, otherwise on...
Right, yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
No, what I was going to say is this last year I had done quite a bit of work to the planter, and I was really impressed at how much better a stands I had in both my corn and soybeans this spring. And you guys were just talking about that a week or so ago. And it's like, yeah, that really pays. Even on an older planter, you go through and basically rebuild everything. It's like, wow. So
yep, exactly. But, we don't have a brand new planter either, and I can just tell you, yeah, the settings on that, everything. I mean, I just met with our guys that work for us on the farm the other day, and we talked about this. Like, look, this is our number one priority for this coming year, is getting that planter to work better. So anyway, we're excited about that. But when we come back to this biological thing, Quickrits Dry is about the only one that I can think of that we've had good success with that's a dry product that you can throw on the seed. We've got a bunch of other things that we would probably have you try as either seed treatment or as an in-furrow liquid. But Darren, correct me if I'm wrong, that's about the only one.
And others that the seed companies are putting on right at the plant.
Yes.
But there aren't very many companies that are on that. So I think you do have the most options with that Dosatron. And then the other thing is, what crops were you thinking about putting this on? Just corn, or are you also looking at soybeans and other crops?
I was going to try it on both some corn and soybeans this coming year. And, you know, I guess I would need to price out what it would take to put a Dosatron on my planter. Because I plan on keeping this planter for a while. I finally just updated a combine this last summer. That was the really glaring need that it had. But,
sure.
You know, so I could put a little more money into this planter because I plan on keeping it for a little while yet anyway.
Yep.
And your planter, what do you have for a planter right now?
He said 7,000. So usually,
how many rows? I'm sorry.
Eight row.
Okay.
Yeah, what we usually talk about, what we encourage a lot of people to do is get some liquid fertilizer on the planter. You don't have to put lots on, but it just gives you options. You can put insecticide out that way. You can put biologicals out that way. There are just a lot of other things we're doing besides just liquid fertilizer. That's kind of the way it was in the old days. It's just, well, liquid fertilizer, nothing. And guys are like, well, if I got high fertility, it's no big deal. So we had a lot of people not doing stuff. But I just think, you know, we're going more toward that direction and delivering a lot more biologicals that way.
Hey, we're almost out of time on the show, Todd, but I want to get your other question. What was your other question that you had too?
My other question is kind of long. I've got a neighbor that I swapped some ground with. They have potatoes on the one field I have. It's the largest field I've got. It's 175 acres. This fall was just a disaster. I mean, the potatoes should have been off by mid-September. They didn't get off till the first week of October. It took us over a week to fill in all the ruts and washouts. And I did get it sown to wheat this fall, and my plan is this summer after we take the wheat off, I'm going to have the dairy that I sell alfalfa to put manure on. They knife it in, but then I was thinking about putting some type of a cover crop on that would help break up the compaction, you know, like some tillage radishes or something, and then
yep.
In the next spring, you know, go in and chisel plot, because I just know it's going to be bad. It was just a disaster after they got the potatoes off.
Okay, so a few things that we'll tell you, just general things about compaction. Number one, we're going to look at, do we need to get some drain tile out there? Let's make sure we've got that addressed first. Two, we want to look at the soil tests and see how we're doing on calcium. We want our calcium levels to be at least 60-65%, just at a bare minimum. A lot of times the most compacted ground is high magnesium and it's lower calcium. Calcium is much bigger. It makes your soil more porous, and the air can get down deeper, roots can get down deeper, all that kind of thing. So those are top two things: tile, calcium. After that, yeah, you're completely on the right path there and thinking correctly. Manure is a great thing. Cover crops, great thing. We usually will do turnips, radishes, and then you can throw a little bit of rye in with it too. You're trying to help build organic matter, everything else. Long term, if you build your organic matter, you have better drainage, you have better calcium, you're going to be a lot less likely to have these issues. But, you know, people talk about this with potatoes, with sugar beets. There are just certain crops. We got a lot of compaction issues many times, and then you got to go fix it after a while. The one other thing I would say, you mentioned chisel plow. We've done a lot of deep ripping with a straight shank narrow point to not necessarily turn everything, but at least go clear down to maybe even 20 inches deep and just kind of lift stuff, create some slices to allow some roots to get down deeper in the soil. So those are just my general statements.
Okay, the calcium and the drainage. The calcium,
yep,
that I definitely can do something about. But okay. Thanks a lot for your time. I appreciate it. Love your program.
Oh, thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot, Todd. Really appreciate that. Yeah, those are common questions, too, with the biologicals. Number one, a lot of interest in the whole industry. This is a very quickly growing segment of agriculture right now. So really excited about that. We'll definitely be talking about that more as we get closer to spring and throughout the season. And then as we look at that compaction issue coming out of these last couple of years, certainly a big one to handle as well. Thanks for listening to our show today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.